I don't see the button.
It's in the top right.
Oh yeah, sorry about that. Hi, I'm Robin, Robin Templin. I'm from Wichita, Kansas. Was born here, moved a few places, ended up back here. I'm 66 years old and retired at the same time COVID came along. It just seemed like the perfect time to get out of there and let the young kids stay in the jobs that needed it more than I did. And that's about it. I do want to say, Jeff, my husband's name is Jeff, and he's in the next room. So I half expected to see my husband pop up on this screen today. I'm good.
Okay. So my name is Jeff, Jeff Burrow, 55. April 16th, 2021, here in Wichita, Kansas, America, the heartland. My story partner is Robin, and I'm excited to get to know her.
Good. Are we waiting for a prompt? Maybe. Oh. What are we supposed to see?
You're supposed to read my bio, I think.
Oh, okay. I'm not seeing it, but I have it in my hand. Okay. Jeff's bio is, I'm from small town Kansas, was raised by a hardworking mother and father. My father taught me that nothing was ever handed to you. It must be worked for. One time, on time, meant 15 minutes early. Respect for others, especially those you worked for and your elders, was always expected. Those values are what have been the foundation of building my business career and raising my two sons. They're adults now and continuing those same lessons that are making them successful citizens now. That's Jeff's bio.
All right, Robin's bio. I was raised with few restraints, but some big rules. Be kind, listen, don't judge, and help if you're able. I'm 66 and a tree-hugging liberal, agnostic, pro-choice, pro-gun control, etc. My brother is a conservative Catholic who owns guns, but we have marvelous conversations about hot topics. We are both sincere, honest, and curious. We want to understand, so when I find myself judging, I know I need to shut up and listen. Even if your bumper stickers raise my hippie hackles, hi, talk to me.
Okay.
So 3 to 4 minutes to share your life story, Robin.
Oh gosh, my life story. Lived in the 60s and 70s, enjoyed every minute of it. In ways that I'm lucky I didn't get in trouble for. Actually lived in a commune at one point in my 20s. Had a 17-year marriage, a good one, where I had two children who are now 39 and 40. And then was single for 12 years and then met my current husband, Jeff. And we've been married for 10. And it's totally different, you know, being retired now, being in the house together all the time now. It's like COVID kind of reset things for everyone, I think. It did for us, for sure. But my daughter and my only grandkid are in Dallas, and my son Matt is here in town, and he's an adult with autism who is pretty self-sufficient, but with his dad's and my support as needed. I am a book fanatic. That's what I do, is read. So I spend much more time looking at pages and screens. And that's kind of who I am.
As I wrote, I grew up in a little town a couple hours north of here. Attended K-State for a little while and got disillusioned with college, so I got into business at age 20 and worked my way through insurance and finance, and have now 33 years 34 years later, have a successful career and own another business. I was married once early, at 21, and that was a learning experience, not unpleasant, but didn't last very long. But then in 93, got married to my current wife, and we have two sons who are in their mid-20s, and both graduated from K-State and are two different careers, one in Kansas City and one in Texas, and doing great. And I'm incredibly proud of the that generation behind me. Is they're working hard, they're making their own headway into the world, and they're off my payroll, which is good. So I love Wichita, I love the Midwest. The people in the middle of the country, I think, are kind, and the values match mine. So, like where I'm at.
Good. Can I ask why you wanted to do this specifically? What do you want to get from it?
I have a varied. I know people all over the country, all various backgrounds as are my clients, that, and I'm always interested in someone's story and their history and how they got where they are. Certainly, politics and beliefs are different from everyone. It's we're all human at the end of the day, though. And so I feel like we ought to be able to talk about it. And at the end of the day, you might not agree on anything, but you can still go have a beer and, go on. Why did you want to do it?
Right. Pretty much exactly the same reasons. I felt like social media and the cable news have just about done everybody in, that's where they get their news and their opinions of other people. And I get my opinions of other people from other people instead of somebody telling me what's scary about the other guys. And so I feel very strongly in that. I think people are good and we're all doing what we think works, or will work, is best for everyone. And if we talk, we'll figure it out. And I have so benefited from relationships with people who are on opposite sides, religious wise or political wise, that I know, I respect, I love. We have amazing conversations, and I think the world needs much more of talking to your neighbor.
Well, I agree. I think, and I was telling someone I was going to do this, and the subject about how divided the country feels like it is, I think we've always been divided. I study history. I think we're in a country that 150 years ago, brothers were fighting brothers, But unfortunately today we get bombarded by those differences in very nobody takes responsibility for how they come across, because they can tweet, they can post something and not have to answer for it,
Right.
Back, 100 years ago, you had to literally go to the town square or you wrote someone a letter. It was a personal type of communication. And I think that's what social media has almost killed.
Right.
So this is, I think, a great project that, to put people together and just have them talk.
I do too. I agree. I remember when I was a kid, and probably you, we had like our three stations, to watch the news on, and they all had to appeal to everyone. So there was none of that vitriol that goes on now. They weren't telling us who was doing what wrong. They just gave us the news. And then once cable news came along, both sides found out, hey, we can carve out a niche. But the niche is less about promoting what we believe than it is about saying what's wrong and scary and dangerous about the other side, which is awful.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
The best example came from when my oldest son was in high school, like a freshman in high school, and Facebook was starting to really get big. And he put something, or somebody in their class put something on there about another student at their school. And it kind of blew up, and the principal kind of called him in and gave him a talking to. And I sat both of my sons down at that time. And just before that, they had found some of my high school yearbooks. And you remember in your high school yearbook, everyone would write things in them. And they had a great time reading what people wrote in my high school yearbook. And I told them, I said, now look, boys, what would you think if my high school yearbook was on the internet for everyone to see forever? And they both, the light came on. And to this day, almost a decade later, neither one of them are big Facebook or other social media type users, even though they're both in technology.
That's great. That's good. Because you're right. It's forever. And I'm watching my granddaughter, who just turned 14, being raised with technology, which means she's got a phone. And it's like a parent's job these days. Many parents' jobs these days is just to try to distract your kid away from the world that they're holding in the palm of their hands. It's going to be different. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Right.
But I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that.
Yeah. And I think every generation has had, even though you're just a few years older than I am, we're kind of the same generation. I think, and so we view this technology as this scary thing, and we both can decry about what we don't like about it. But you know, in the 50s, it was Elvis, you know, shaking his hips and how the horrible that was going to be. And in the 20s, it was the girls wearing those dresses and dancing in the speakeasies. I mean, but and as I say that, I still worry about this generation that's coming out. They're going to have to take care of you and I when we're older. They don't know how to talk to people. I think that gets lost.
Right. I agree. I'm assuming I know we shouldn't assume, but I'm assuming, are you religious?
I am a Catholic, and member of a parish. We're like 50% of the Catholics. We are somewhat slackers, in how often we go. I was raised Catholic, and, I appreciate, the religion, and I do believe in God and, a higher power. You said you are agnostic. What is that? Tell me what that means.
You know, what that means is that I haven't figured it out, and I don't think I'm capable of figuring it out. I've had times where what I experience makes me think that there's something, but I also can believe in lights out, you know, over and done. But I asked about your upbringing and your religion. I didn't ask about your upbringing, but my brother, who's a Catholic, was raised by the same parents as I, even though we're seven, eight years apart. My parents, my dad was a Unity minister towards the end of his life, and that's very metaphysical. It's Christian, but you learn about all religions. And that it never worked for my brother. He didn't like open questions. And it was just right up my alley. And then when he grew up, he married a woman who is Catholic. Her whole family is Catholic, been raised Catholic. And he is now the most devout among them. You know, he studies, he researches. It's exactly the best fit for him and for raising his four boys. And so I think it's interesting. And I think it comes down to personalities. I think there's personalities who like limitless choices, and there's personalities who like order and tradition and rules. And sometimes I think it's just our basic personalities that divide us, even though we need both of them. Because I need somebody with order in my life. And I'm guessing you need somebody who's a free spirit in your life. I'm not saying you're not a free spirit. I shouldn't make any assumptions about you.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the Catholic religion does, I bristle sometimes at how confining it can be. And I have gone to other Christian churches, nothing, anything crazier, you know, Methodist, wow, or something like that. I do like that tradition and that order. But I also, you know, I do like a little choice and some freedoms that, you know, the weekly mass doesn't really provide. You know, it's always the same. So.
Right. Right.
I totally get that.
That's interesting. There was a time when my kids were teenagers and I was a single parent at that point, that we attended a large African-American United Methodist church. And it was fabulous. And I wanted my son specifically to be there to see strong men who could be honest, who could cry, you know, who could admit their fallibility and all that. And so it was a great experience for him. And if I needed to find a church home, I would probably end up there. I just don't feel the need for the commuting part of it. And maybe that's because of my books and my friends, I don't know.
So the question is, what is your earliest memory of politics?
Yes.
My father we were raised very, very working class. But we always, he has conservative ideals. And so I think from the time I was a teenager, I was watching politics, not as intently as I do now, of course, but from teenager into my 20s, trying to figure out, you know, which side was better. And I always felt like I'm very conservative from a political standpoint.
Right. My earliest memory, or at least the one that's impactful to me, was in fifth grade when Kennedy was assassinated. And it's especially memorable because we lived next door to my school. So my mom came running in the door carrying a portable black and white TV and crying, which, you know, right there, the world has come to an end if your mom shows up and is crying. But us watching the news together, and my only impression of Kennedy at that point was my parents liked him. I thought that he and Jackie were like Camelot. They were just these beautiful couple. You know, I had a fairy tale thing about them. So I was devastated. And then the class was split about half and half, and we're fifth graders, and a few of the kids applauded. And I remember thinking, the face you just made, what?
Wow.
You know, it was like, what are you doing? We're fifth graders. What do we know to be applauding somebody being assassinated? And that was my first impression of how we are the product of our parents, for one thing. And it really affected me. It affected me deeply and maybe started me down my liberal, we can do better than this road, you know.
So what's the next question, Kevin? Oh, we get to ask our own questions now. Okay.
Okay. You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. Talking about somebody talked about stories, and stories are the way that we get to know people, you know. And I'd like to know if there was an experience in your life, like Kennedy was for me, but a specific experience in your life that led you to your political beliefs or your spiritual beliefs, but that just kind of really set you on the road you were on. Is there something you remember?
You know, not from a spiritual standpoint, when you grow up Catholic, and you're going to, I had first grade taught by nuns that had the rulers that slapped you on the hand, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's innate in you, I think. And I felt like, you know, it felt very confining, but it felt comfortable at the same time.
And so
while, as I said, when I was in college, I went to some other Christian type churches a couple of times and explored that. I didn't ever find anything that felt as comfortable as a Catholic church.
So was there a point where you doubted? I'm sorry, I talked right on top of you. Did you ever have a period where you just really sat back and doubted or questioned?
You know, I've never doubted the existence of a higher power in God. I really have not ever done that. No. I just, even still today, question big corporate religions' methodologies. And it sounds like that may be something that you share. You have to worship this way, and you have to sit this way, and you have to pray this way.
Right.
When I think a person's beliefs are that's the most personal thing you can have. So how can I tell you how to worship God in a way that I do? I don't feel I can do that.
Right. Well, and so although I don't know what I believe, I do carry a lot of the Bible with me. There's parts of it that will always be with me. One was, don't make a public, I'm only going to be able to paraphrase, so forgive me, but you don't need a public spectacle to pray. You can go in the closet. I think that was Matthew. I love the story of the parable of the farmer who hires workers all day long to work in the field. And even the person that comes 5 minutes before the end of the day, they all receive the same pay. I love that philosophy, that it doesn't matter when you come to the truth, how you come to the truth. You know, it's who am I to judge? Who am I to judge? But I think part of what affected me was my dad became alcoholic later in his life, about your age, actually. And had just a couple years of it, but went through AA. And then in his ministry, in his church, AA was always a big part of it because it changed his life. Even though he was a believer before that, the 12 steps and admitting his helplessness changed his life. And so that was an effective thing to me. And also, I do have to say, my granddaughter has severe concussion. And I prayed, you know, so there's times where you think, if nothing is going on, it's free for me to question everything. But that was a moment of, I'm praying. So yeah. I don't know where that puts
me. They said there's no atheist in foxholes, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And so don't you find that when you were in a time of strife like that, and you went to that higher power, why then would you still somewhat say you're agnostic?
Because I believe that we're capable of, I believe that we have an innate desire for there to be a higher power, because whether it's fear of death, whether it's uncertainty, I think we have an innate innate desire to believe in a reason, in a purpose, in an afterlife. And so I doubt, am I doing that because I need it or because I believe it? And then my daughter, who is very religious, tells me, it doesn't matter. Why are you worrying about this? You know, just go for it. Just be open and stop trying to analyze everything. And I'm an analyzer. So
you don't want to label it. I mean, but you sound to me like you really do believe.
Yeah, maybe. But can you, here's a question. Can you believe in a higher power and believe still that there is no afterlife, that like when a leaf dies, it's gone? Do those have to be conflicting beliefs?
No, I don't believe so, because nobody, when I think of God, I think of someone making us in his image and
right.
Learning how to treat others as you want to be treated, et cetera.
Right.
The afterlife, no one knows. And so I don't think they're one and the same. I don't think you have to have both. But to live a godly life, I think a person ought to believe that there is a reason why we're here. And I think everything does happen for a reason.
Right.
And I never know, you can't know what's going to happen tomorrow or what's going to happen in your children's lives or what. And the old thing, the big question a lot of people struggle with is, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Why would God let that happen?
Right.
And I ask that all the time, you know.
Right.
And several preachers try to answer that question. I guess you got to get, at the end of the day, I look at it, I guess there's, for you to know how things are good, you have to see how they're bad.
Right. Right. I once heard a minister say that when a baby is very sick and has to go on water for a day or two to get their stomach healthy, they're going to be absolutely miserable and not understand why it's going on. But the parent knows it's in their best interest. It's for them to grow. I get that theory. I like that theory. I remembered it, obviously, because it's been years. But I don't know if I believe everything happens for a reason. I know we're all going to die. So if you have cancer, if there is a God, it doesn't mean God's ignoring you. It means that's the route you're going to take. You know, if there is not a God, obviously, again, we're all going to die. There's no fair, no unfair. I don't know. I personally hope you're right. And if so, I hope we're not. I hope we're judged on a bell curve. That would be good in my area. But I've gotten my be kind, do unto others from my upbringing and just my basic upbringing, I guess. I totally believe in being kind, listening, understanding, believing other people's truths. And I figure we're not supposed to name names of authors or anything, but you probably know this one philosopher author. When he was asked, what's wrong with the world? What do you think is wrong with the world? And he said, I am. And that's my philosophy, is I'm the only one that can, I can't change you.
Right.
You know, I can only work on me. And that didn't take God. That just took, or maybe it did. I'm not going to say that. But, you know, that took my dad and my mom. And it's just kind of who I am. I'm an optimist, Pollyanna.
So
let's all get along.
So you mentioned being kind a lot. And I feel I'm a very kind person myself. Yet,
right?
You classify yourself as liberal. I classify myself as conservative. Yet the media will say, "Oh, well, conservatives—they're not kind." So, When you saw my bio, what did you think?
Ah, I had that as one of my first questions, is what did you assume based on my bio? You didn't have to assume much from mine because I laid it all out there. But I assumed I was going to meet an older farmer who, because you made a point of work hard. You have to work hard to get what you want. And I assumed maybe you had an issue with Medicaid, helping others via the government, and what some people call handouts. And my son gets Social Security disability, and he works, and would love to be off of it. But I assumed you were, less open to, I assumed you figured everybody was on an even playing field and had the same opportunities to succeed. And I don't think that at all.
Well, and I think that's the assumption that I feel that gets made about conservatives, is that we're unfeeling or whatever. And it's exactly the opposite. This country does more for charity than any other country in the world. While I'm very fiscally conservative, and certainly there needs to be social programs, and we can debate, we can debate for decades on the size of those social programs, and certainly that's going on now. But I do think that personal responsibility does come into play. There are people that say, and you say, well, not everyone has the same opportunities. I think there's so much opportunity in this country. This has never happened before in history, a country like the United States of America, where you can be you and I can be me, and the government's not dictating that. I think it's unbelievable. And yet people, they seem to just want to throw that away and say that, and that's what bothers us. I say us, people that I talk to, my conservative circles, we don't like when people try to tear down this country.
So people have died. Because I have had that, I've had people say that to me when I've said there's lots of room for improvement. We still have a ways to go. And part of my opinions come from, I was in education for years. I always worked in Title I schools with the poor families. And I saw a difference in the education my daughter got and the education the kids in the schools I worked at got. Like it or not, it's just true. The quality of the teachers, the quality of the building, the quality of the equipment, little stuff. There was disparity in what my son in special ed got, people-wise, resource-wise, and what my daughter, who went through the gifted program, got. And it wasn't, that was only a systems problem or a low expectations problem. You know, I don't know, but I do know that the Title I schools, those kids did not have the same opportunities that my daughter did. They just didn't.
So why wouldn't, I'm going to assume, why wouldn't you support school choice? Why not give those parents in those neighborhoods a voucher so that they could go to a school that they felt was better for their own child?
Right. I'm not against that, but I think we have to be then prepared for when the parents who can take advantage of that do, which my daughter going to gifted magnets, it was still public school, but we took full advantage of whatever resources. We'd have to have a plan for what to do with the kids that are not left behind, but the kids that are left in public school that don't have, because a voucher would not pay the entire education
Well, I don't know how.
And there'd be parents. Yeah,
but they would be.
Yeah, I guess we don't know.
They'd be.
Right.
I think
it's a tricky question.
It would go a long way to acknowledge, because I agree with you. I'm sure that in the schools, like you were talking about, that they didn't necessarily have the same programs that my kids that went to a private parochial school did.
Right.
But
right.
You have we seem to not let that choice even be tried. You have to get out of the box.
Right. Right. We tried it here in Wichita for a while. We had charter schools when we had Edison.
Yeah.
And unfortunately that didn't end well, because business wise they weren't on the up and up. But I'm not against choice in education. I just want to make sure we're taking care of the ones that don't have the choice or can't afford the choice, whatever.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. So when I saw your bio, I thought I might be talking to a friend of mine who it looked like she would have written this. She's been a friend of mine for 35 years. She lived on a commune at one point, and still somewhat is following the Buddhist religion and things of that nature. And so she's moved away. I talked to her maybe once or twice a year, and we are polar opposites. And she gives me trouble about being conservative and trying to build businesses and make money and all of that. And now that she's retired and she's older than you are, and kind of starting to slow down. I think she wishes she could go back, because she should have maybe, you know, worked a little differently for her financial security. And of course, that's what I do. I teach people how to retire. So I didn't teach her.
Where were you when I needed you?
Oh shoot,
I may have just lost a train of thought that would have gone well with that. I'm trying to think what it was. I don't know. It'll come back to me. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps it will, perhaps it won't.
But when go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah. No, you go.
Well, I'm curious, you seem to be someone that I can speak to very easily, and we're kind of Midwestern, and I think people are like that in the Midwest. And when you say you're liberal, what does that mean to you?
Right. That's a great question. To me, it means a lot of things that I'm not. Because politically, I mean, I'm a history person like yourself. I read everything I can get my hands on about the Constitution. I am a believer in our government. I was scared to death for a while, because it seemed like a lot of the things that we thought were rules, suddenly if you say, so what? You just go past the rules. And that seemed to happen a lot these last 4 years. I really worried about our democracy, about where's the rules, guys, you know. But okay, so why am I a liberal? Is I guess because I'm always looking out for the other guy. And you can be doing that as well. I don't know why I think that makes you conservative, but I think liberals like fewer rules, but you know, we have our buttons, like pro-choice, anti-choice, guns. I really don't. My brother has guns. I would like some restrictions. My son should not be able to buy a gun. He could. I don't believe that most people need a assault rifle. I'd be okay just those. I think the slippery slope is where conservatives and liberals get in trouble, because we think, well, they're really after my guns. And I'm not. I am not after anybody's guns. But I would like my son not to be able to have one. And I'd prefer you not have an assault rifle and have to go wait, blah, blah, blah. It'll never put an end to everything. But the slippery slope, I think, is often not really that. DC has us judging others by people on TV.
And the reason I asked you what liberal meant to you is because I think this country is really lost sight of what liberal or conservative really means. And you mentioned JFK being a really pivotal point, his assassination. He was a Democrat, but he wouldn't be touched by most of the Democrat Party today. He cut taxes. He did many conservative things that I wish he would have lived and been able to maybe change how things have gone in the Democratic side today. And that's the thing that I think is holding us back, is you shoehorn everyone into this little box. And just because I am in the conservative box means, oh, I must not care about people, and I must not care about, you know, those less fortunate, et cetera, when it's exactly the opposite. I think government, and I think this is, so the second thing that makes me really curious about your statement is that you socially don't want a lot of rules. You don't want a lot of rules for your faith, et cetera. Yet when it comes to that government, all of a sudden you want very big rules.
And Well, I don't know if I mean very big rules. Is restrictions on guns, not taking them away, but putting some safety measures, is that a big rule?
Well, it is. Well, now we're getting into guns. We only got 10 minutes left on it.
We don't have to. We can skip over that.
The problem is that government feeds on itself. And so if you make a rule today, then the representative or the senator the next day, he wants to make another rule, or she wants to make another rule. And so that's what we have now, is you can't even print out the tax code because it would be bigger than your house, you know.
And it would be different the next time
around. I feel like government should do a few things. They should build roads. They should keep us safe and fight wars if they need to be fought, and help administer for those less fortunate. That's about it.
Okay, then hello, hi, I'm your good friend. Because that's exactly what I would say. That's exactly what I would say.
Well, then I would say that you're not liberal. Newsflash.
You may be right. You may be right. Plus also, so many of the things that we like to get all worked up about are state decisions and not federal decisions anyway, which is what makes it good if, you know, Kansas can be Kansas, California can be California.
Correct. And I know, and I, without even mentioning the last 4 years, and you kind of touched on it, that you're feeling those 4 years probably vastly different than mine. When it came to fighting this pandemic, what that administration did was he did leave it up to the states, because we are so different. Right. And there is not a one size fits all for Kansas and California. Totally different. Yet now that's being changed by the current administration, and you have this overreaching arm that's coming down.
Right. But don't you believe the pandemic is one size fits all?
Well,
no matter where you live, that we all need same information and protection.
Well, I think you need the same information, but when it came to dismantling so many lives by government fiat, I mean, that's the sad, horrible thing. I mean, I never changed. I came to this office every single day. Never changed my life this past year. Had groups of friends met. And I had COVID in December, and it's, you know. But for if someone for to tell you that you've got to close down and ruin your life's work, when across town somebody's under a different set of rules, that is horrible.
Right. Right. But I see your point. I see your point. but I also disagree in a way. I think that they were simply thinking everything worst case scenario, because a plague is a plague is a plague, and the history of plagues have changed, you know, civilization. But I also get your point. We hunkered down because we could, and because we're older, and because my main goal was to see my granddaughter in Dallas, you know, and so we just hunkered down till we got both vaccines. And then I had a friend who was equally small life that we were able to get together. So I, you know, got out some, but it bothered me, like in the grocery store when people would not wear masks. It did bother me, just because, why don't you just do it so that I feel better? How is that harming you to wear a mask at the grocery store next to me if you know that I'm fearful?
And I agree with that statement. And I supported, as a business owner, that business owner's ability to mandate in that business what people did.
Right.
But now that people have been vaccinated and they're still wearing masks and they're still driving alone in a car with a mask on, which freaks me out.
I know, me
too. I don't
too.
Understand that.
I consider myself immortal. I'm just out there, well, man. I've got both shots and I'm going for it.
we got to get past it, you know, but people are so divided because of the social media part of it that you just can't get over it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, and our governor was pretty darn cautious and on it pretty quickly.
And some of the representatives that were on the other side are good friends of mine in Topeka, and certainly wanted to diminish her power and did, you know?
Right.
But at least we were able to do that in Kansas differently than, say, Missouri or whatever. And I think that was a good decision by the federal government, you know, to stay out of.
Well, that's to me what government should be, is people at the table with whoever is in charge, giving them the opposite idea. That's what a government should be, is somebody taking away your hard stance and saying, what about this?
Right.
And I may have a voice at the table.
I may have just crowned you a new conservative.
Call my brother immediately.
Right. Well, it says we got to wrap it up, but so I don't. So okay. I appreciate this. I enjoyed it immensely. And I hope this project is successful in getting more of these kind of conversations to happen.
I do too. It's exactly what I hoped for. So
it's nice to meet you, Robin.
Okay.